You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Side Community News, and today we are talking about Mr. Under the Radar himself, Daniel Theis, a Pacers acquisition this offseason that flew under the radar for good reason. The Pacers got younger. The Pacers got more assets. They're clearly shifting towards a rebuild. A 30-year-old big man does not necessarily fit the traditional discussion of this Pacers offseason. But a lot of the drafted players got a lot of talk. A lot of the newly acquired younger players, Nesmith, Jalen Smith, for example, have gotten a lot of talk, and Daniel Theis hasn't, and it makes sense. A lot of the talk was actually about how the Pacers could trade him away to clear space for DeAndre Ayton, but now that the NBA offseason's kind of settled, Theis is still on the team, and I talked to Aaron Nesmith about him, finally, got to get some stuff on the record about Theis. I want to talk about him. I will have a post up on Forbes Sports page about Daniel Theis and his where he can help the Pacers if you want to read more about this, and I want to talk about some of the highlights from that, where he can fit on this team, and if he'll make it the whole season with the Pacers, because I think that is an important part of all this. You can read the quotes from Nesmith in that piece as well. So Daniel Theis, look, I get why he's not like the sexiest addition to the Pacers, but as a 30-year-old big with finals experience, has played on rebuilding teams, has quite a bit of value to me to this Pacers squad in ways that I want to talk about. And I think for number one, besides that he's just a good player, is that Daniel Theis is a fantastic screener. And that's really helpful for the Pacers. You know, when I talk about Buddy Hield on this Pacers team, so the thing I talk about a lot is, you know, regardless of what his role is coming off the bench or starting, where he will help this young Pacers team is he is a threat from deep. He provides spacing. He puts fear in defenses. He makes opposing teams stretch out, spread out, and all of a sudden, if he's in the corner, it's 4-on-4, things like that. And so what Buddy Hield does is him just being out there helps the younger players. It gives them more space to operate. It makes it easier for them to develop and get easier reps. Daniel Theis does the same sort of thing by being one of the best screeners in the league, especially at his height. If you're a really good screener, it makes it easier for a young Pacers ball handler or any Pacers ball handler who's setting up a young Pacer to get free, to get space, to have an advantage versus their defender in a way that lets someone like Tyrese Haliburton make more reads, that lets TJ McConnell probe into the paint and set up a young shooter, that lets other players be in the right positions to do things. He's a very good screener. I was reading a piece for research in Mass Live from Tom Westerholm where Jason Tatum was talking about how good Daniel Theis is as a screener for the Celtics team. He said, I get a lot of buckets off Theis setting screens and ceiling and stuff like that. I always make sure to say thank you, right? Because that is where Theis has shown a lot of value to his past teams. Like, he doesn't put up a lot of shots. He's not getting in the way. He's just setting screens, rolling to the basket, getting out of the way, and making plays. And I think that screen setting will be really valuable on this Pacers team. The last team that Theis was with that he played for a whole season with, which was the Celtics in 2019, he finished in the top 10 in screen assists that season, right? Like, that just kind of shows when he's in the system, when he understands what he's supposed to do, when he's setting screens, knows the timing of the sets, he does free up enough plays, or he frees up his teammates enough to make things happen. Now, the players he had on that Celtics team, Kemba Walker when he was still good, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, obviously better than the Pacers ball handlers. I don't think he'll be in the top 10 of screen assists per 36 minutes or anything like that, but a talented screener, that is the top of the list of ways he helps. He will help the Pacers should he play often and get on the floor quite often. He parlays that into good skills in the lane. He's a good finisher. He's a good in the role man. He's good as the role man, excuse me. Finished in the NBA.com, uses synergy data to track players in certain play types as the role man in pick and roll. Daniel Theis, 92nd percentile last season in the NBA. 1.42 points per possession the Celtics averaged on plays where Daniel Theis operated as the role man. He's good in the short role because he makes quick and smart decisions, right? He's not a good passer necessarily, but a good decision maker, gets rid of the ball quickly, puts up shots when he's supposed to, resets when he's supposed to. And because he's a good screener, usually those role man situations, he's in an advantageous situation when he's catching it, and he never turns it over. He's a very low turnover guy on the catch. He's very good in the pick and roll. I think, ironically, if the Pacers were going to angle to be a little better this season and were more interested in playing Theis than developing other young bigs like Brissett or Jackson or Bitadze or Taylor, you know, he would be a pretty good fit with Tyrese Haliburton in those pick and roll situations in particular. And when he is rolling to the basket, if he gets ahead of steam, if he gets close to the rim, he's scoring. He doesn't shoot very often. His decision making is usually, do I think I can easily score this or not? But if he can easily score it, he usually is correct and puts it in. He's 75% at the rim in his career, 74.9 if you want to get technical. With the Bulls 2 seasons ago when he was with Chicago, over 80% at the rim, which is ridiculous. Mostly hovers around that three quarters mark, was almost at 80% with the Celtics this past season. So when he is near the rim, when he's rolling in the lane, and when he's a threat around the basket, he's very threatening. That fit with Haliburton, I think, would be very strong should they play a lot together, though I don't think, given the Pacers' current setup and infrastructure, that would happen all the time. But it does make sense that it could happen at times this season should Tice be a guy that Rick Carlisle decides to turn to. Another way, and this is sort of similar to rolling, that Tice can be helpful, is cutting. But I did distinguish these because of a couple things. You know, you do the research about who he played with and what he in what situations he played with. And in Boston, he was playing a lot with guys like Al Horford, like Robert Williams. In Houston, he was occasionally sharing a front court with some of their young bigs, right? So he's played alongside other big men, Alperen Şengün, Christian Wood, for example, you know, and that means not necessarily that he, you know, I'll talk about him playing the 4 and the 5, not necessarily that he's always the 5, though, when he's in the game. And I'm not saying the Pacers should be rolling out double big lineups all the time or anything, but Tice has played enough 4 on good teams and bad teams that he's gotten good at cutting. So separating out that cutting from the role play is important here because, like, something he'd fit really well with TJ McConnell is when he's in the dunker spot or when he's on the baseline roaming away from the play, if someone drives to the basket and rotates off of Tice, he's a brilliant cutter to flash in and get a bucket that way. When he's on the weak side, there's a pick and roll on the opposite side of him, he's really good at being a fulcrum that can kind of make it harder for a tagger, making it hard for a stunt and recover, and cutting to the basket at those times. He's graded out in the top 50 percentile of cutters in the entire NBA, you know, regardless of situation, pretty consistently in his career. So I think that he can, in the right situations, even if he's not involved directly via a screen or being really near the play, things like that, still be an impact guy on offense away from the play with the cutting, because he has other skills in general away from the play. We'll get to a couple more in a second. The big one being shooting, but you know, he's more valuable in that way when he is putting pressure on the defense in some way by moving close to the ball or around the ball. The shooting is interesting because you just glance at his basketball reference page, 33% for his career. 1 in 3 is fine as a three-point shooter. Everybody wants more than that in the NBA these days. Since 2018-19, him and Miles Turner, basically 1% apart as three-point shooters, right? So for a big man, he's an all right shooter. He's an all right option. Decent enough spacer. You're okay with him taking that shot if you're the Pacers or... But you're also okay with the other team taking that shot, right, if you're the defense. You can live with a Daniel Tice 3. If you'll recall, he hit some threes in the postseason against the Pacers a couple years ago, right? So he has that ability to be a floor spacer on occasion, but I would say in general, cutting, rolling, being a bruiser is more for his role. On the defensive end, this is where I think he can help a little more than the offensive end because he's only 6'9", but I think he helps on that end of the floor because he's got a rare combination, kind of because of his size, of strength and speed, right? That's not an easy combination to have, but he's kind of got both in a way that lets him be good. He's had a defensive box plus minus. He's had above average defense every year of his career except for one, which is really, of course, helpful if you're the Pacers to have a guy like that on your team. And he's very, like, if you remember the series he played against the Pacers that I just referred to in 2019, was very disruptive on the defensive end of the floor. And his on-off stats everywhere he goes suggest he's a positive defender. With the Rockets this past season, a terrible defensive team, he made their defense at least passable. With the Celtics this past season, the best defense in the NBA, their defense was better with Tice on the floor than off, right? He is a plus value defender to me because of that combination of size and skill. Now, he's not a better defender than Turner. He'll probably have a negative on-off with the Pacers, given the context of what role he will be playing. But he is a quality defensive option, especially at the five, if the Pacers need to turn that way, should Turner not be able to go, should they need to rely on Tice on the end. They have a guy that they can turn to. So he has a lot of pretty good skills. Now, he obviously would be a starting level player if all these things were stuff he did every game. He's not the most consistent player. He's not a high volume player at basically anything, right? He took 291 shots last season total, the entire season. That's, you know, 6 shots a game, basically. He's not a high-volume guy. He's not dribbling much. He's not a creator really at all. You can't throw him the ball in the post. He doesn't dribble very often. He is screen, cut, away from the play, connector more piece on offense, and those players are valuable, but they have a ceiling on how valuable they can be unless the surrounding pieces are really good. There's a reason he was less impactful in Houston than he was in Boston. That's because his skills are much better catered to a good team than a bad team, which is, of course, unfortunate because the Pacers don't project to be very good this season. So, yes, he's still a plus player. He's good at finding his own space and making it himself via screening, via well-timed cuts, but without any ball skills or creation, what he can be on the Pacers is less than what he can be on good teams. But that said, I think if I had to sum up what he could be because of his size, speed, and ability to fill gaps, that he finds himself and doesn't rely on the system necessarily to produce, he is still a plus value player. And I think that's a guy that the Pacers and Rick Carlisle can lean on. Like, the stuff he's good at is stuff the Pacers do all the time. Pick, roll, cut, all that kind of things. The Carlisle system suits Daniel Tice pretty well, and I'd be intrigued to see how he fits if he gets on the floor. That's the big if with him. What's his role going to be? Will he play? I want to talk about that next here on the Locked On Pacers podcast. Before we do that, though, I got to talk to you guys about betonline.net, the fastest and easiest way to check in on all of your betting needs. You can find all the latest sports and events at the number one source for odds, lines, and games at betonline.net. They have reviews and news of every pro league, Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, even golf at betonline.net. And they continue to be the top online resource for all of your sports wagering information. Live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts they have you covered. And they've got lines up for NFL preseason. If you're listening on Friday or even Saturday before the Colts play at 4, they've got Colts lines up for their preseason opener against the Bills. Josh Allen not playing. Matt Ryan looks like he'll play a quarter. The Colts are favored in Buffalo by 1.5. If you're interested in getting in on some preseason football action, head over to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and the action happening today, because BetOnline.net is where the game starts. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, we're talking about Daniel Tice. So, one, hop on over to Locked On Celtics just because that was Tice's last team. But two, the NBA announced today, yesterday for you listening, if it's Friday, that Bill Russell's number 6 will be retired by all 30 teams. No one else will wear number 6 unless they were last season. So if Lance Stephenson not re-signed by the Pacers, they will never have a number 6. But also another reason to listen to Locked On Celtics to hear more about the late Bill Russell and his impact that jersey retirement will have on that franchise and the entire league. Let's continue talking about an ex-Celtic in Daniel Tice and what his role could be on the Pacers this season, because this is the tricky part with Tice. Like, there, look, if you zoom out and think of the political side of basketball, if you will, for a second, at least in terms of rotations and minutes and things like that, players always talk about politics, right? Daniel Tice, he is 11 days younger than TJ McConnell, which is relevant because if he was born a dozen days earlier, he'd be the oldest player on the team. He'd be the veteran on the Pacers team. Not in terms of experience or anything, although he does have finals experience, which I think matters quite a bit, but in terms of age. He also is the Pacers' third highest paid player, which is crazy. Turner and Buddy Hield, the only two guys that make more money than Daniel Tice. A lot of that sort of thought, the veteran in terms of age, the veteran in terms of experience playing in a finals, the veteran in terms of money, sometimes those things can matter in determining who plays and who's happy and what is cared about. And the Pacers have been pretty good at being transparent and not having that stuff matter at all. And I'm not saying it should matter or that it will matter, but it could matter. And I say all that to say it's tougher to just easily write off and just determine what Tice's role should be. Because in my head, and in the ideal basketball world where you're a young Pacers team trying to find minutes for your young players and be decent as you can be this year and better next year and better the year after and continue to grow, you'd want your young guys to play. And the Pacers have 26-year-old Miles Turner and 22-year-old Jalen Smith and 24-year-old O'Shea Brissett and 20-year-old Isaiah Jackson and 24-year-old Goga Batadze and 23-year-old Terry Taylor, all in the front court, ready to play and deserving of minutes. And Turner is good now. And if Jalen Smith's the guy he was with the Pacers last year, he's good now. You know, you have guys who should play and are good enough to play. But Tice also has merits to play. The skills I mentioned in the first segment, some of the stuff I just said, the fact that he was a key contributor on a team that made the NBA Finals 2 months ago, my gosh, time is going slow. 68 days ago, Daniel Theis played in an NBA Finals game, right? Like, this stuff matters. He is good. He is, if you rank the Pacers from best to worst, he would be in the top 10, which would be a rotation player in theory. So figuring out what he should be and what is the best for him on this Pacers team was a little difficult. When I did the Pacers rotation exercise, I did not have any minutes for him. And he was the first name I typed down that I said, that's kind of weird. You know, no Daniel Theis, that's kind of weird, right? Jalen Smith starting at the four. The Pacers have already tipped that at Jalen Smith's introductory press conference. Miles Turner, presumably, I don't know why this would not be the case, starting at the five. You know, O'Shea Brissett wasn't in the rotation to start last season, but Rick Carlisle ended up playing him a lot. He led the Pacers in games played last year. Isaiah Jackson's a freak of nature. They drafted Goga in the top 20 a couple years ago. Right, how do they find minutes in this front court for Theis? So I don't know how they would do that, right? Maybe it's they add an 11th guy into their rotation somehow, and they split his minutes with a young big. Like, maybe Isaiah Jackson plays 10 minutes and Daniel Theis plays 6 or something like that. Or maybe it's a little less O'Shea Brissett and Daniel Theis plays the 5 next to another young big like Isaiah Jackson or like Batadze. Maybe that's something they can do to get him in there. And I think there's a way you could use Theis's utility because he's just okay enough as a shooter and good enough as a cutter, even when not right by the basket, to play him at the four, that there are ways in lineups that he could sneak onto the floor and be of service. Like next to Turner, for example, yeah, for 5 minutes you could get away with that. The Pacers probably don't want to slam double big down the throats of their team anymore after the last couple seasons, especially alongside Miles in particular. But in general, they could get away with that and that would be fine. So I think there are ways and roles abound, many of them, to get Theis on the floor that would make sense. And that means, yeah, if he ends up being in the Pacers rotation, I would get it. I don't think it's the ideal choice, though. I personally, I mean, if you made me rank the front court players, Turner, most deserving of minutes, probably Jalen Smith next, then Isaiah Jackson, then O'Shea Brissett, Goga Batadze, Daniel Theis. Probably in that order. I might move Theis over Batadze. You could quibble with a lot of things. But here's the other thing. If Turner is moved, I would also understand wanting one vet in your big man rotation. And the way the Pacers roster is kind of built out right now, especially if you take Turner out of the equation, like I just hypothetically said, they kind of have it split in a way where it's like their guard rotation would be young guys and one vet, TJ McConnell being that one vet who could come in there and stabilize things and help young players have a steady hand to run the show. And then their wing situation is a lot of young guys and Buddy Hield, who can be their stabilizing shooter and their quality force in a lineup like that. And then in the front court, they would have a bunch of young guys and Daniel Theis, where they have it set up where they have like a teacher and the young guys who can learn from that teacher situation. I think Theis, if Turner's traded, would definitely play in that they would want that vet out there to help the team be better first and foremost, but also because that veteran infusion is helpful, I think, to young teams, right? Al Jefferson had value to the Pacers when Miles Turner and Sabonis and Ekan Ibogu and all these guys were young. That's why they brought in Kylo Quinn, right? Having these older big men is still valuable on these teams, and Theis sort of fills that role for this Pacers squad. Something else I think is interesting when you talk about his experience and being that vet is he's played on good teams like the Celtics who made the finals, like other Celtics teams that were good and made the conference finals, but he also had value for the Rockets just this past season, who were the worst team in the league or one of the worst teams in the league. He had value to that team, started on that team, right? Was a helpful bridge piece for them from era to era. Then they traded him away for stuff that they could better use, right? He has experience more so as a vet on a young team, which will matter for sure in the context of the Pacers, and also as a useful piece on a good team. And I think that sort of experience can be helpful for the Pacers. And I think that his screen setting being helpful for the younger Pacers, his ability to be useful in high leverage situations as an offense defense guy, there are reasons to play him. There are arguments he could play for this Pacers team. So I think those arguments are strong enough that if on opening night Daniel Theis plays 10 minutes, I would go, yep, I get it. I get why Rick Carlisle is doing that. I get why the Pacers are thinking this way and playing him. And, as we'll talk about in the third segment, maybe displaying him as a trade piece isn't such a bad idea. It did kind of work out for Houston. But I think in the ideal world, when the Pacers really jot down their notes about what their goals for the season are, and I'm sure they've already done an activity somewhat like this, and figure out what that looks like on the court with what 10 to 11 to 9 players should play every game, I don't think Daniel Theis would fit those goals the best out of every player that could play in the front court. So Ideally, structurally, long-term, Ty should not be in the Pacers rotation, but there are reasons he should play. Players will get hurt. He'll get minutes on this team, presuming he is on the team on opening night. But what exactly his role should be is a little difficult to say, but he has enough skills and fits their play style well enough that I would understand why if he was to play come opening night. But let's talk about and contextualize sort of the reasons the Pacers would move him and what his value actually would even be in that situation in this third segment. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today. And every single day for your second listen, hop on over to Locked On NBA. Hear the latest news from around the association. Friday show with Adam Mares and Wes Goldberg, one of my favorites from Locked On NBA every week. So let's talk about Tyson, his kind of role and future with this franchise. Because let's go back a little bit. A couple weeks when the Pacers were trying to sign Ayton, outside of the move they made, which was the easiest, the moves they made to sign Ayton, the easiest way they could free up the space under their own accord was to stretch the three guys they didn't cut, Dwayne Washington. But the way I was talking about a lot that the Pacers could cut the space was trading Daniel Theis to another team for less salary in return, because he doesn't really make sense for them as a long-term piece because of the young guys they have on the interior, because his contract extends beyond this season. There's just not a lot of reasons for the Pacers to say, this is a guy we want on the team long-term. That said, his contract is fine. It's not crippling. It's not bad. For those who are unaware of it specifically, $8.7 million this coming season, $9.1 million in 2023-24. And then there is a team option on the fourth year of his contract for $9.5 million when he will be 32, going on 33 in that season years old. I would imagine that would get declined. Either way, if you want to view him as a trade piece where the team receiving him would probably think of him that way, he's essentially a two-year, $17.5 million player in trades. And that's a fine contract. That's totally fine. And I think he's a very fairly paid player, which means he's a neutral value contract to me. And I think what happened to him last season sort of reflects that perfectly, right? When he was traded from Houston to Boston, the return for the Rockets was Dennis Schroeder, who was not in the mix that much in Boston on an expiring contract, Enes Freedom, who's also an expiring contract, and Bruno Fernando, also an expiring contract, who the Rockets brought back. He's a young enough, interesting piece that they could squint and say, we got positive value. But the Rockets traded Theis essentially for cap relief, right? They did get a little bit, again, in Fernando, they got a little bit, tiny bit of positive value. They bought out Freedom, and Schroeder gave him something, but they couldn't flip him. He's not on a team right now. So I would say that because those players were expiring contracts in their situation, and a couple of them ended up playing for Houston, that is like ever so slightly positive value, especially on a good Celtics team that, again, made the finals this past season. So for the Pacers, I would say, you know, if he doesn't play at all, his value will drop to neutral. But especially right now when teams just sort of sorted out their situations at every position and have figured out their plans for the season and their cap situation, Theis is probably a neutral value contract. So when the segment was supposed to be about, before I just went on a tangent about his value last season, was, will Theis last this season or last through his contract with the Pacers team? You know, he does, because he seems like a really decent to solid trade candidate for the Pacers. Not because he'd fetch a bunch of value, but just because if you can move him for a more expensive but expiring contract, for example, right, you could help the other team save some money, you know, next season, or get some, you know, get free up their tax bill this year. But the Pacers could, you know, get closer to the salary floor and get something that fits their team a little better. Shedding that money could have been helpful in getting max space that doesn't matter anymore. But he still seems like a decent trade candidate if they can get some of that value like Houston got, where they were able to get up more cap space. So if the Pacers play him, he could, of course, add to his value by being a good player. But I think something to add here is, from a Pacers perspective, you hate thinking this way. You never want a player to get hurt. That's very team planning brain. That's very cap brain. That's not very basketball brain. In the spirit of the game, you never want a player to get hurt, and you never want a player to fail. But from a Pacers perspective, if a reserve center gets injured, or if a team is really struggling and they're not getting good minutes from their front court, that team could want reinforcements in the front court. That's what the Pacers would want in theory early in the season, is that to happen, so that team would want a guy like Theis that they could bring in and say, okay, this is now our backup center. We are now helped by having this guy on our team instead of who we have, instead of what our current situation is. You know, if Mason Plumlee gets hurt in Charlotte, if Mason Plumlee is really struggling for the Hornets, right, he's on an expiring deal, I believe. you know, trading him for Tice, the Hornets take on some Burda next year, but they get a better center. Like, would that be something they're interested in? For example, I don't think that that trade would ever happen, but that is a concept of, you know, what a Tice trade could look like or how the Pacers could get a little value there. It's like trade him for Plumlee in a second kind of thing. Because, you know, the deal he's on, it does extend beyond this season, and that sort of is a factor in this stuff. Like, it's hard to dump a guy with 2 years left on another team for just nothing. So if Turner or Goga gets traded instead of Tice, he'll be needed this season by the Pacers. They'll need front court players. If both of those guys get traded at some point during the season, then they'll definitely need Daniel Tice on the team. He could make it through, I think, this whole Pacers season. I don't think that's crazy. If the Pacers have injuries, Turner's had injuries in each of the last two seasons. Goga's had injuries in each of the last two seasons. You know, who knows what their front court rotation could look like or be needed? Who knows what Jalen Smith could look like? What if he takes a small step back to start the season? Tice could be needed as a reliable, steady center for this Pacers team. Maybe he does make it through the whole season. I find it hard to believe he'd make it through the entire contract he's currently on with the Pacers. He'd be at a solid trade chip next year on draft night or in free agency, but he's not very cap crippling. He's basically a neutral value guy in his deal, as evidenced by what happened with the Houston Celtics trade that happened last year. So even though the Pacers probably can't trade him for value right now or on opening night or even probably for 2 months into the season, there are ways that they could flip him for expirings or better fitting pieces or stuff like that. Or he could be used in a bigger trade to take back more salary. And for the Pacers team that's shy of the cap floor, I don't think that's a crazy way to think of it as well. Maybe he's in the way, in any sort of Westbrook trade that ends up materializing. I have no idea. That's just seems to be the only credible path the Pacers could think about at this stage to add to their salary and reach the floor before the season starts. Not suggesting they should do that, but it is on the table as an option, according to those reports from The Athletic. So to sum this all up, you know, I think Tice is good. I think Daniel Tice is a good NBA player. I think there are ways he could help the Pacers if he plays, but I don't think he should play that much given the Pacers' current context. But if they do need him out there, the ways he helps their team fits their play style pretty well, and he is a valuable piece that could be moved at some point, but probably not for a ton of positive value. If you want to read more about Tice, you can on my article in Forbes Sports, and you'll get quotes from Aaron Nesmith, his teammate in Boston last season, now teammates with the Pacers, who my favorite one from in here is Aaron Nesmith saying, "I feel like the city of Indy is definitely his kind of vibe," when talking about Daniel Tice. All that and more in the story if you want to read it. So thank you guys a ton for listening today. Have a great weekend. Monday we'll be talking about some Athletic articles that have come out this summer talking about the league at large and the Pacers in general. Right? They did a tier ranking for players in the postseason. Only one Pacer was on it. They ranked the offseason for each NBA team. The Pacers in the bottom five. We'll talk about all that with Jay Rigdon on Monday. You won't want to miss it, so have a great weekend. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you then.